these, and we place them right after the webinar. You'll find them at republicmagazine.com/webinar. And you'll also find several pages listed of webinars from the past on every type of topic related to the freedom movement and all kinds of other issues. And check those out. Feel free to share them with others, because that's how the information gets out and helps make change occur. With that, I'm going to go ahead and hold on just one second. I want to set one other thing up here and make sure we're all in place for what we're going to do. And we have a very special guest today. I'm going to go ahead and share with you something that I think will give you a little better idea of who our special guest is today. He was a speaker, a key speaker at the Conspiracy Con that happened just, oh gosh, I don't know, maybe a couple of weekends ago. It's not been that long ago at all. H. Michael Sweeney is an investigative author, consultant, specializing in New World Order crimes and personal privacy, personnel privacy security matters, to include political control technology, PCT. Sweeney is best known for his nonfiction Professional Paranoid series on these topics and the four-volume Fatal Rebirth series, a historical and future look at the New World Order via the Unified Conspiracy Theory. This 10-year, 1,500 footnote project examines the military, industrial, intelligence, media complex, which he labels as MIM, M-I-I-M, and resulted in a 1999 screenplay depicting the downing of the World Trade Center by passenger jets and resulting Middle East oil wars. Subsequently, Mr. Sweeney claims to have personally thwarted gas station tasking described by President Bush as a counterterrorism victory, in addition to possibly derailing a bioweapons attack some months later. Mr. Sweeney offers a suite of consulting and direct intervention services to persons targeted by groups in ways beyond their ability to defend against. A free helps kit is available on request, and he'll tell you how to actually get that, I'm sure, as we move along with this, as well as a sample newsletter on PCT. Mr. Sweeney is currently seeking to establish the Free Will Society to help targeted individuals and Never Spies, an ultra-secure email solution for persons needing more secure and more flexible email alternatives. He also has written a sci-fi trilogy with its own screenplay. And for more information, you can visit proparanoidpress.com. And that's just like it sounds, pro, P-R-O, paranoid, P-A-R-A-N-O-I-D, and then press, P-R-E-S-S.com. And he's going to, I billed this today, and I hope I did it correctly, but it was 666 reasons for smart dust and RFID, and the unified conspiracy theory, the unified conspiracy theory. So with that, I want to welcome Michael Sweeney to the webinar today.
Hello, Mr. E. How are you doing?
Good. I didn't make it to the Conspiracy Con, but I understand it was quite an event. And our publisher, George Shepherd, was there filming and streaming it live. And then we posted not only that entire conference, but last year's Conspiracy Con 9 at expostop.com. And you can actually find that at expostop.com/conspiracycon. And we have that there streaming on demand anytime you want it, 24/7, unlimited access. So people can go there and take advantage of that. But at any rate, let's move into maybe if you could explain a little bit about how you came through your process to be doing what you're doing today. How did that all happen, Michael?
Well, to try to save a little bit of time, the one-sentence explanation is I became targeted because I came into possession of a document. It wasn't so much the possession of the document because it was truly a public domain document. It was not classified, but it touched upon classified matters in a way that most people would look at and just ignore it. In fact, there were built-in factors to almost make it deliberately ignored. And yet I looked at it and I thought, well, wait a minute, there's just something a little bit peculiar here. So I came up with a theory as to what the document really represented. And there was one person who could verify that, who was involved in Watergate. And I happened to have a contact for him. So I contacted him through his publisher to ask him if he could verify the fine points which would have confirmed the theory about that document. And within 3 days, I was targeted, and that targeting went on for about 5 years. And in self-defense, I was able to beat them at their own game. And I identified several illegal CIA proprietaries that were involved, and law enforcement agents, and pretty much got them all canned, shut down the fronts. Kind of blackmailed my way into a little bit of a peace agreement, and they even gave me a cash settlement to cover my troubles.
Okay.
And from that, I wrote the Professional Paranoid series to help other people, because if you go to the police with stories of being followed or surveilled, or heaven forbid you should mention anything that sounds at all like mind control electronic weapons, you're immediately labeled as paranoid. And once you're officially labeled like that, you are a political, social, financial zero as far as the system is concerned. You will get no help. So my books are intended to help.
Yeah, it sounds like, too, that you might, if anything else, that those types of people can easily find themselves not only harassed, but maybe incarcerated and or put away in some type of mental ward or whatnot, you know, committed somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely a threat. A large percentage of the infrastructure, including law enforcement, is quite commonly involved in my client issues, and in the end, we were able to verify that to the point where it becomes a part of our solution. In any event, the document itself started the research into the Fatal Rebirth book, because with the fine points, in essence, proven by the fact that they elected to target me because I dared to think this about the document, I had to take a look at all the other points in the document. It was pretty much a laundry list of all the crimes of the intelligence community and New World Order elite for roughly 6 decades. And from that evolved the unified conspiracy theory. And the simplest way to express that is to say that if you take a laundry list of all of the really scary events in American history, from the Kennedy assassination, Iran-Contra, SNL crisis, our current financial crisis, September 11, almost anything that you want to add to that list that is not well resolved by the official explanations, especially those events, what if they were actually logical, stepwise planned events towards some goal instead of some seemingly random thing by random people? If that was the case, then if you could figure out what it was that they were working toward, you could apply a litmus test of deducing what the end game goal was. And if you knew that, then you should be able to predict the next steps. I made two predictions from the unified conspiracy theory that were quite troubling, and I did decide to act on those. The first one was I feared an assassination attempt on Ross Perot to keep him from dividing the votes in that election. Because if he had done that, it would have been very difficult for the fake Chads to grant Bush the victory. And as it turned out, I notified a back-channel connection in the Secret Service that I had this concern, And he was able to confirm to me approximately 2 months after Ross resigned from the election. And remember that he resigned on the evening of the Colorado. Do pardon me, I'm going to have to take a sip here.
Okay, sure.
The other day I had kind of a food poisoning, so my throat's a little bit raspy anyway. In any event, excuse me, he would have won that primary. If he had not resigned that evening, he would have been on the ballot. And so a last-minute pullout, even though he had won, he could even have won the race for all we know. In any event, I learned a couple of months later from my Secret Service guy that it was a mailed anthrax attack, which is very interesting in its own right, against his family that prompted his withdrawal.
Mm.
Now, that did not make traditional media, although there was one small mention of it many months after I had been informed. In any event, the second one was the scariest, and that caused me to write the screenplay. It's called The Electronic Apocalypse. I guessed the wrong mechanism, but the upshot was terrorism that brought down the World Trade Center by jetliners and resulted in Middle East oil wars. And I published that in 1999, in fact, almost 18 months before the actual event. So I believe in the unified conspiracy theory, and for those who are going to be furiously typing in their questions, the endgame scenario is the establishment of a one-world government. And that's not tomorrow, but it's very soon, because there's a lot of things that have to take place first. And one of the very first things that has to happen is the United States has to cease to be the dominant world power. And we have to have what we call the North American Union. And so in order to do that, a couple of things are going to have to happen. For one thing, we've got to get rid of the current Constitution. So we have to have, in order to do that, a threat that is so scary we're willing to fork over our basic freedoms in exchange for some new version thereof. I actually, in Fatal Rebirth, have the actual new Constitution printed. It was recovered, thanks to an intelligence operative. And that document is called the Constitution of the New States of America. It sounds very much like our current Constitution, but does not give us the same protections. In fact, the government can take away retroactively any right they want, for any reason they want, at any time they want. Regardless, in order to install that, they have to first declare martial law. The U.S. military has already declared if we have another September 11 major-style attack, they will declare martial law. And then it would be just a simple matter to suspend the Constitution in order to help restore long-term order, because there will be a lot of panic, because they'll at the same time they'll stir up fake militia activities against the military, and there may be some real militia activities. In fact, my book has specific advice to the militia on what to do and how to do it, even a rules of engagement. Let's get out of that detail. Let's go with the fact that once they've done this, the new Constitution empowers them at any time to shift into the North America Union, and from there it's easy to go to the New World Order. So that's the unified conspiracy theory.
Okay, one of the things that I was wondering about, let me do this if we might, because this follows right on the heels of what you were just saying a moment ago. We have Laura Brown, and I guess it's Laura Brown Young and Harris, or I'm not sure whether that's what that is. Anyway, it says, do you think it's time to take up arms against our so-called government before they take out all of us? I think it must be time, because nothing else has worked. And if we don't stop them now, we're all going to end up in FEMA camps or worse dead.
There are an awful lot, and that's a good question. It's a very good question. And Fatal Rebirth does try to address that. It's in four volumes. The first volume paints the history from 1947 to roughly the year 2000. so that you can see how the unified conspiracy theory is reasoned out. It does have all the footnotes so you can judge how valid it is. And, of course, you can use the predictions, I suppose, as a measuring stick as well. Volume 2 deals with the current tide of terrorism, including September 11, in rather detail. False flag operation explanations that go right down to step-by-step of how it could have been done. It isn't necessarily the correct answer, but it was a careful analysis I did, and I do provide technical proofs that it's possible. Then the, Volume 3 is the future if they get their way. Volume 4 is our future if we interact and do the right thing, which does address the question directly. The simple answer, in my opinion, is this, is we should all be prepared to defend our Constitution. There is something called the Revolution in Military Affairs. It's been going on for a little over a decade, and actually probably closer to two. And it has to do with the evolution of technology, and the military has felt that things are changing so fast they need to kind of rethink pretty much every aspect of war making. And one of the things that RMA included was a definition of types of war and the ranking of the likelihood of having to face such wars. And the next major war that they predict that we will have to face that will be a new kind of war is what they call a people's war. And that was defined, and it's been published in the Spotlight newspaper just this way. Defined as, and I'm going to paraphrase, so this won't be an exact quote because it's kind of from memory, but the words are right. It would be against the poor, the disenfranchised, ex-military, and constitutionalists.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they're vilifying the Constitution, and people, they're trying to radical make it seem that people who support the Constitution are not patriotic, we're not trying to help the government fight terrorism, and that we're violent and radical. The Constitution is a radical, obsolete notion in the official
view. Terrorists.
They won't say it in those words. That's right. They won't say it in those words, but they imply it with their various news slants. And so if the militia, heaven forbid, should pick up their guns, let's say they declare martial law and go and attack a National Guard unit, that's not going to be a good thing. If the average citizen does the same thing, that's not going to be a good thing. But there are citizens, like myself, let's call them activists, politically incorrect persons, that are probably on a list and headed for a FEMA camp if martial law is declared. I would say rather than making sure you own a gun, make sure you have an escape plan. It's pretty easy to get a false identity. It is illegal to have a false identity, but it is not illegal to have false ID, unless you created it yourself, of course. But if somebody else, I don't know, I'm just kind of speculating here. And I address this in my professional paranoid series that has step-by-step how to protect yourself. But in any event, be prepared to exit stage left. Now, as far as actual combat, the Fatal Rebirth book, Volume 4, does include the PRA battle plan. PRA, in the book, it's done like a docudrama, so there's fictional elements. And the PRA is the People's Reconstitutional Army. So that's the uprising. But, excuse me, the rules of engagement forbid outright war with the government. Basically, you go after the ones that are violating the Constitution and not obeying and supporting the Constitution. And so if you're going to have a gun and you're going to join the army, so to speak, yes, be prepared to do it. I personally do not own a weapon, but if the day comes and I need one, I'll get one from the nearest cop or soldier. I have no problem whatsoever. I have about six different ways I can do that. And so, you know, I'm not going to have to have a gun. I'm not going to have to register a gun. I'm not going to be on somebody's list as having a gun when they knock on my door asking for my gun. I'll just give them a big question mark. But other people will have guns. I'm actually going to be at gun shows selling my books, so it's a little bit ironic. But I believe in the right to own gun. I come from Texas, and I think the average person, including all the folks in the city, owns something like 3.5 guns, which is more than they have children. And in the farms, the average is something like 5 guns. And so, yes, I definitely believe in the right to bear arms, and they're, of course, assaulting that left and right as well. There have been numerous military operations, some of them in joint effort with police, that have been unconstitutional and illegal, and even banned by judges and still undertaken, where they have actually gone door-to-door and simulated gun searches. That's happened in approximately 4 or 5 states. Again, that's been written about in the Spotlight magazine. We really missed the Spotlight magazine newspaper, actually, in Washington, D.C. This was the one source where you could really see what was going on in the United States with respect to military abuse of power.
You know, you'll be interested to know that, maybe you do know, there's the American Free Press, which is pretty much a lot of the same folks, just a different name, a different day. But you're familiar with that, right? It's a weekly newspaper the same way. In fact, we're having the editor, Jim Tucker, on tomorrow talking about Bilderberg.
No, respect.
Reporting.
Yeah. I respect Jim very much and the work he's doing. And if you don't know what the Bilderbergers is, you must tune in. If you know what they are, you must tune in because that's a very important topic. That is the head crown main power force behind the New World Order movement.
Yes, certainly. But at any rate, so there is still that newspaper around. It's not exactly the same as Spotlight, and certainly a different name and all of that. But I know a lot of people. Anytime you change something, there's certain things that change about it. We do have a guest that is. In fact, I think I know this must be our Miss Anonymous. Are you there?
Wow, I'm up so soon, huh?
There you go.
What gives? Okay. I wonder if Catherine Albrecht's on the call, because I notified her that this was going on. I know that RFID is her infant child that will never grow up.
I'm not aware of her being on it, but
okay.
She would be a good guest sometime.
I want you to tell me if I'm on the right track or if I'm jumping to conclusions or you never thought of it or whatever the case may be. I'm interested in knowing if, for starters, if our equal opportunity law or equal employment opportunity law that doesn't allow any employer to discriminate on the basis of gender or ethnic origin or a name they don't recognize, does that have anything to do with the gradual implementation of the one world government in the sense that and in the meaning that if we, got used to working with Hispanics, working with Asians, working with Africans, whomever, that spoke different languages than we do and have a foreign accent and had names we didn't recognize, that it wouldn't be such a culture shock to us when our borders actually disappeared and we got a one-world government? And then I have a second question, but I'll let you answer that one first.
Thank you.
Okay.
Well, it's kind of an interesting question. These laws all came to pass as I was growing up. I'm old enough that I've seen them all. I was pretty much involved in the civil rights issues of the 60s. So I would say that most of these laws have evolved naturally and are essentially just. However, when Congress writes a law, it is a lot, physically a lot larger than it needs to be. And there are usually things buried in there that are subservient to external goals, ambitions. It could be just something as simple as pork, but it could be something as nefarious as pre-planning for something down the road associated with the New World Order evolution.
Mm-hmm.
So there may be some elements of what
Well, keep in mind the Bilderbergs started meeting long before EEO was passed.
True, true.
Okay.
And most things that have happened here in the U.S. that are evolutions of the sort you're talking about, not just that topic, but lots of topics, happened first in Europe. I mean, in other words, they dinked around because the Euro Common Market was the test bed. And so even our school systems, as we have them today, all the crap they're doing to dumb us down started in Europe approximately two decades earlier.
With the advent of kindergarten, yes.
Yeah. So you know you're I think you're on the right track in terms of postulation, but I think we'd have these laws anyway.
Mm.
But it is absolutely true what you say that you know the borders are going to be non-existent. The Canamex Highway alone is going to devastate us economically in ways that NAFTA and CAFTA and all the rest have only scratched the surface of. You're going to shut down the entire West Coast shipping industry, for one thing, almost completely shut it down. You're going to almost decimate a good third, I'm estimating, of the U.S. trucking industry because it's going to be replaced by Mexican trucking. And the profits are going to go, instead of to U.S. firms, they're going to go to Mexican and Chinese firms. And,
Okay. And then the second question is basically along the same lines. You know, I'm beginning to think that America is the central, or the U.S. is the central driving force behind this one world government, this United Nations, which is nothing. You know, you've got the United States, and then you've got the United Nations, which is, you know, all of the nations united, just as all of the states are united within the U.S. It took me a while to get that. But is it fair to conclude that I've heard three different figures on this. In a USO speech, I heard that we were in 150 countries. I've heard Ron Paul say it's 135, and I've heard 130 touted elsewhere. But anyway, America occupies, you know, more than half the countries in the world. And, you know, my question is, you know, is that done? Is America, you know, being used, is America's occupation being used, since I don't think we're going to be able to own the world eventually? Is that being used as also a way to psychologically prepare us, you know, for the one world government, or for one country to be in the presence of every other country, you know, in the world? Because there's no logical, the only logical reason from my perspective for us to occupy so many countries is eventually that we will all become, you know, one country.
Well, that question is a little closer to some things you would find in Fatal Rebirth, actually.
Okay.
There is a document, and it is reproduced in my professional paranoid book called The Defensive Field Guide, which is a series of checklists and lists and proofs and basically resource information, a unique collection not found anywhere. The military has used multiple times a questionnaire which is dubbed or nicknamed by the public as the Shoot Americans questionnaire. And the cover was, it was a single lieutenant's postdoctorate study, and it was just given to one room full of Marines as a way of gathering some sample information for his paper. But it turns out that it's been given to lots of people, not lots of Marines, lots of bases, lots of units in other branches as well. And it's a long list of very serious questions. And one of the questions is, or actually a whole passel of the questions are tied directly to what you asked, asking if the soldiers would be willing to turn over command to a UN commander. And different ways that that could be done at the presidential level or even the unit level. Questions like, I am a United Nations fighting unit. Is that true or false? So those thoughts are there, and the intentions are there. And yes, if we're already pre-established in other countries, and the UN is in other countries. I mean, if you take those two of them, and there are very few places in the world where there aren't hot spots where you will find either U.S. or UN troops. And if they merge in some way through a presidential order, through a UN document of some sort empowering it, then it's all over. You know, there are, again, we go back to the spotlight and more recent reports of whole train loads and yards full of hundreds, if not thousands, of UN vehicles in the United States. UN categorically denies that they have any UN assets in the United States, yet we have photographic proof, even video proof. So somebody's lying, and somebody is staging for something. There's a lot of disinformation, and whenever you have all of that, it's a bad recipe.
Anything else?
Not right now, but I'll raise my hand again if something else comes up. Let him talk.
Okay.
Let him talk.
Yeah, certainly, absolutely. Let's do that. Okay, thank you very much for that.
Well, you know, you started off asking about a gal who liked the topic of RFID when we talked about Canamex. That's very tied to RFID. The mechanism that's supposed to allow the goods to flow freely across the border with some quote-unquote level of border security is all of the containers, containerized trucks and rail cars, will have the traditional little barcode readers on them. But all of the product inside and all of the cartons themselves, the packaging, and again, the truck, the container itself, will also be RFID chipped. And people driving across the border will have RFID chipped licenses, international licenses. That international license is ultimately going to be the tool that will lead to what we might call a national ID, and it will be RFID based. And what RFID does, if for those of you who haven't heard of it, you really ought to learn about it, because it is the greatest threat to your personal security. It's the mark of the beast in its potential, because there are actually bioimplants that have these things on it. And what they do is they just sit there dormant. They don't do anything. They have a serial number electronically. And a burst of radio energy, a very small burst, will trigger it to send its own little burst of radio energy that transmits that serial number. And so a car driving across the border doesn't even have to stop. The scanner can read that tag as it drives by and say, okay, this guy's good, and his cargo is good. That's the way it's supposed to work. But guess where that information goes? It goes directly to the U.S. military.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't go to any trucking agency, although they probably get information as they need as well. But the person that handles that information and disseminates it to wherever it's going to go is the U.S. military, the Army specifically. And moreover, if you've got anything with an RFID tag, and everybody listening does, you have hundreds of items in your home right now, and in the end, every single item you purchase will have it. If you buy Gillette razors, if you buy Pampers diapers, if you buy Max Factor makeup, you have RFID tags. a van can drive by your house with a little handheld device and read the serial number of every RFID tag in your home. Every RFID tag item sold, the RFID tag item serial number is logged into the retailer's database and associated with you if you paid by credit card. And if you pay by cash, eventually, since the cash already has RFID tags in it, put a 20 in the microwave and burn it to death. If you don't believe me, because RFID chips will explode under microwave. In any event, in the future, the banks, when they issue cash, and all cash registers, when they handle cash, will log the serial numbers of the cash as well. So the databases will have association of ownership of every single item that there is by this system. And we know that the Total Information Awareness Office, by its own white paper and its own graphics that I have copies of and I have produced in my talk PowerPoint that I used at ConspiracyCon, and I will make available to people, does show that the military has, intends to have, access, backdoor access, to all commercial retail databases. And if you think that sounds a little far-fetched, the CIA already has two companies, one in Europe and one in the U.S., that claim to have and sell to anybody databases on 92% of the American population. And so the data is out there, and it is going to be used against you. So if I drive by in a van and I read all those tags, I can create a profile of you that is so accurate that I could even predict when you're going to buy your next pack of cigarettes, and I can set you up for an event if that was my intention.
Mm-hmm.
So the activist, the politically incorrect, the potential troublemaker, somebody who gets on a list because they dialed the wrong phone number. You know, that happens. And this is how the government gets funding for the and claims there's so many cases that they're investigating on terrorism. If they're investigating a guy for if FBI is looking at somebody for a regular crime or Homeland Security or somebody else is targeting a suspected terrorist, if you just accidentally dial a phone number associated with that person, your life is put under a full surveillance net as well, and you don't even know it.
Mm.
So the RFID information is very insidious.
Okay. Well, one thing, you've been called a dustbuster. And
it's
now at this time so many people do know about the radio frequency identification devices or RFID as you were just speaking of, but so many people don't. Smart dust, is that pixie dust? What are you talking about? Twilight zone? So maybe you could tell us a little bit about that one.
Yeah, you know, my talk scared people quite badly. It's my understanding that people who had gone there intending to be there for one day, I was the first speaker, and they came in. I had about 400 people there. I didn't even get to give my full speech because the opening ceremony ran half an hour too long.
Hmm.
But just what I did give apparently scared people so bad that the ones who were there for one day signed up very quickly for the second day, at least some of that's the feedback I got. It wasn't really my intention to scare people completely because along the way I had good news, you know, because I tried to balance it and put it into perspective. What we want to do is worry about it, absolutely, and we want to fight back. And that's the part, unfortunately, that was missed, the steps that we can take today and in the future. And also it predicted the future as to what this technology will really mean. For example, there will be courtroom evidence introduced based on RFID. You have to be ready for that. You throw a package of cigarettes over a fence, somebody gets murdered there, you're immediately a suspect.
Hmm.
So you have to be prepared for all kinds of little ramifications we just don't have in today's social construct. But smart dust is one of the other topics I talked about. I talked about RFID, smart dust, MIMS, and SIMS. SIMS are memory cards. MIMS, microelectronic mechanical systems. All of these things, including smart dust, not RFID, but those last three items, well, actually, SIMs don't either. So MIMS and smart dust rely on super micro miniaturization and can involve nanotech. This gives them the ability to make ultra-small particles fine enough that they can literally float in the air. They literally look like dust. If you take RFID, if you go and peel away the tag at the store, you'll see it's a pretty huge thing. It looks like a copper wire in a circle. The bio-implant's a little larger than a grain of rice, but the actual chip itself, and it functions perfectly fine just by itself, is about the size of the period at the end of a sentence on a typed letter. Now, take that smaller, as dramatically smaller, as that period is to, let's say, your thumbnail. And that's what smart dust is like. And each little mote of smart dust is a dedicated device doing one very small thing, like maybe it senses temperature, maybe it senses audio. It might be designed to sense motion, light. It can sense almost anything. It can report. It can be hit by a laser beam from a long distance away and reflect back information. This is a very scary technology because you could go into somebody's home and sprinkle this stuff and know just about everything going on in that house from a distance, and they'd never be the wiser. You cannot easily combat this with traditional technical security countermeasure methods. It is so small, it takes literally an electron microscope to see it and to try to determine what it is. And I actually had some images of various little devices at the talk. But smart dust is capable of floating. It even can alter its shape to take advantage of air currents so that it can rise or lower. So if they wanted to move, say, in an outdoor environment, and they know the wind at a given altitude is moving in the right direction, they can have it lift off, so to speak, and rise to that altitude, be carried over to a given point, change its shape again, and then drop back down. So in a way, it's kind of mobile. That's sort of a military application. I do not think the average listener here is going to have to deal with smart dust, and there's some reasons that that's the case. For one thing, it's extremely exotic. But the scary part is this: in testing smart dust, and they have these kits that you can buy. Anybody can buy them, really, and that's kind of the scary part, too. So if you're you become a corporate enemy, you piss off the wrong company, they could possibly use it against you, be highly illegal. But you can buy a smart dust kit, and what they did is they took one of these kits and they sprinkled a preschool, and they put cameras everywhere. They've done this with RFID as well. Walmart put cameras in stores, and you bought Max Factor makeup to camera track your activity in the store. I think the military also had cameras all over town as part, as you know, the real test of the RFID capability. Smart dust is the same way. So they had cameras. The unique feature of smart dust is that it's a hive mentality. Everything can communicate with everything. And so when you, if you hit one of them with a laser beam, you can end up with a signal collected from all of the smart dust motes in the environment through a single transaction. So they had cameras, and they would trigger the sensors on a repeated basis, and they would correlate that with the camera images. And the scary part is, to me, again, if you buried a military program into this test project, which really was the cover story to find better ways to teach by seeing, you know, what the kids were really doing when the teacher said something, you know, what was distracting them if they were distracted and so forth and so on. Gosh, I don't need to put that kind of technology into a classroom. All I need to is have somebody sit there and watch, right? Or put one camera in there. So I just don't buy that cover story. So what if, on the other hand, this stuff migrates? The kids touch something with smart dust. It gets on their clothes. It gets on their hands. They take it home. Now it migrates to things at the house. So now a black van can drive by and learn what's going on in the house. And this stuff does migrate, and so if you have two individuals interacting, you know those two individuals have interacted, and you can track the secondary individual. It just goes on and on and on. So between smart dust and RFID, those two items alone, I'm very afraid of what the black ops potential is for the military and intelligence communities. In terms of abuse of power, there will be no personal privacy anywhere.
That seems pretty obvious. It really does. Well, in some ways, you almost want to ask, how deep does the rabbit hole really go?
And that's where we get into MIMS. MIMS also relies on the nanotech. And MIMS interacts with the body. Not all of it, but they make medical products based on it that will bond with the body. The body will not reject them, so they make very good bioimplants, and they use them in legitimate ways. You can get various implants that are possibly life-saving, but certainly life-improving. And yet you can turn around and use the same thing as a political tool for abuse. The MIMS technology with nanotech combined can go right down to the level of taking a look at DNA, for example. It's so small, it can look at DNA. So if it's in a body, so you can introduce it into, let's say, the water stream. It goes into everybody's body, and each little unit will know what kind of body is it in. Is it in an Asian? Is it in a black person? Is it in a Caucasian? And so forth. And so that's scary because MIMS also have the ability to emit something, whatever you want to define something as. It could be a bioweapon. It could be nanotech devices. It could be a virus. It could be medicine, and that would be a good use. But the other ones are more nefarious. So if you wanted to have a race war, if you wanted to commit genocide, MIMS, if distributed among the population and properly designed, have the potential, and I don't think we're there yet, but they are working on it. We have all kinds of material that points to that. But this would give you a tool to selectively wipe out a good percentage of a given race and do it very quickly. The Chinese have announced that they're working on that. Of course, I don't know if I give strong credibility to this, but it is, it has been reproduced in some fairly serious resources that I give some credibility to, that the Chinese have been working on a way to get rid of the white race. They see us as a threat to all other races, and frankly, they're probably right if you take a look at the Bilderberger agenda. In any event, they feel that they need North America for their population to grow and expand because they're getting too crowded in China. Likewise for Russia, which is largely Caucasian. So they're working on these weapons. We're obviously thinking, well, if they're working on it, maybe we should work on it. Gosh, it's going to be a scary future. First one gets the draw. You're talking about a huge loss of life. It doesn't have to happen.
We've got Laura Merrill, Young Harris, Georgia. Do you think an EMT will be used against Americans when we start fighting back to save our coast, or at any time soon they're going to start making people leave their coastal homes? And I think this will start a civil war, and I don't blame them. I think it's all just a false flag to start the New World Order. Thanks for all your great info. Love your show. Any comment to that?
Thank you. I'm not quite sure I followed it. May I have you read the first part one more time?
Yeah, do you think a EMT, I'm not sure what, EMT, will be used against Americans when we start fighting back to save our coast?
Save our coast. It might be talking about the Gulf. And I was a little taken back by EMT as well. Electromagnetic was usually what EM stands for with the kinds of things that I deal with. You might ask for a clarification on that when we come back to that question.
Sure, yeah. Laura, if you can, if you do want to type in a little bit more clarification so we can be sure and address exactly the right question that you're asking. In the meantime, I'm going to go to someone that's holding. While I'm going to that person, I do want to mention that if you do have a question and you're on the phone line, just dial *2 on your phone keypad, and we'll be able to unmute your line and let you ask the question. If you are on the internet and listening via the link, as a couple of questions already have come in that way, what you want to do is type your question into that small question box underneath the link and submit it, and we'll make sure it gets asked. And I've just unmuted, I believe it's Miss Anonymous again.
Okay. You said that the RFID tags are already in the 20FRN. Are they in any other denominations to your knowledge? And then the second question would be, if we do, there are two ways we could get rid of them. We could blow them up in the microwave, but I don't know what the bank would think about that. So how do you get rid of them? And then, you know, do we just have to travel with ones only from now on?
That's kind of covered in actually the Professional Paranoid series and my talk. In my PowerPoint. Again, good questions. You don't want to microwave them because you will kiss it goodbye. The bank will not honor because they will recognize that's what you've done, and what you've done is violated a federal law that says you shall not destroy money. So they could actually use it against you.
Even though they do accept mutilated currency for exchange.
Right. I mean, if you had money burned on the edge, that'd be fine. They'd give you a replacement on that. I mean, you might find a bank teller who wouldn't necessarily know and would go ahead and exchange it, but I wouldn't do that to all your money, because you want to take it into a store. The store's not going to take it. They'll say, take it to a bank and get a replacement. I don't want that in my cash register.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd be within their right to do that. So you'd still have to go to the bank and still have tagged money. But what you can do, and this is a similar concern for credit cards. If you have a credit card with a transparent portion or a reflective...
Well, okay, but to finish your first question, are you then suggesting that we travel with ones to remain anonymous?
Well, what I was going to say is you do the same thing with the money that you would do with the credit cards that have the chips. And if you have a card with transparent or gold reflective square, you likely have such a card. Just wrap them in foil. I mean, if you're really concerned. I mean, you really don't need to be concerned today so much. In the future, it'll be a much greater concern once they're able to actually have all the cash registers and other devices to sense these things in place. Right now, it's a very small network, but it's growing rapidly. Any new supermarket is likely a threat.
How are you supposed to know if a supermarket has such a protocol in place?
You really wouldn't. I would just base it on the currency of their cash register. If it's a relatively new cash register, it's at risk.
Hmm.
But in any event, if you were a person of interest, you know, a political activist, a politically incorrect person, I would, and me, I don't care. They can do whatever they want with me. I have my own defensive methods. I even go out of my way to cause trouble because that gives me more material to go after them with. I learn their methods that way, and that way I can write the right stuff. But the average person who is a concern, just wrap it in foil. You know, just have a heavy-duty aluminum Sorrento wrap doubled over once so it's even firmer, folded like a V, cut to the appropriate shape, just drop it in there and drop it in your wallet. You have to replace that after a while because as it crinkles, it'll eventually tear apart. But that will stop them. It won't stop your transaction issue.
Okay, but again, are the ones equipped with that? I don't think the ones are equipped with it.
Denomination part of your question, you're correct. You can hold them up to the light and see the little strip.
Mm-hmm.
If you get the light just right, and I think you'll find it's five and up.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, and if you would, I believe I asked you something else. And you also said that don't bother putting it in the microwave because you'll
right.
just mutilate it. Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Surely.
All right. Great. Appreciate that. And let me just check and see if we have some more that's come in over the Internet.
For your information, we're right at the 1 o'clock mark. I can give another extra half hour here.
Okay. That's just what I was going to broach the subject before taking the next one is to see what your timeline was and if we can run just a little bit over. I don't want to run too much over, but we want to at least give people enough to where they felt like they understand exactly what you're doing and what's going on here. The lady that had sent over a question before, Laura Merrill in Young Harris, Georgia. She says, sorry, I meant a EMP, not EMT, the weapon that hurts your ears because of the high-pitched sound. It seems that when they start trying to evacuate the coast people because of the oil, that those people will try to fight back. So instead of killing them, they will use other kinds of force like an EMP.
I do understand the question. EMP, electromagnetic pulse. And EMP, I don't think they'll use that because it's too destructive. EMP pulse destroys all electronic items that are working. So it would ruin car engines. It would ruin appliances. It would ruin major infrastructure elements, power generators, motors. It wrecks havoc. It also would probably cause some physical injuries if it was strong enough, really, to be felt. It would probably be very unpleasant. They have other tools. The National Guard could just do it. I mean, they're looking for an exercise, a test of their ability. Katrina was a test of their ability to manipulate large populations that were very unhappy and distressed. And that's if you take a look at the mishandling at Katrina and Hurricane Andrews, for the matter, if you take a look at the way the military responded, they responded late and they responded heavy-handed and they didn't respond with the right stuff in the right place at the right time. It was a test to see just, what can they get away with in terms of population control in an unpleasant situation. So I'm sure they'll find a way to do it without an EMP.
That was kind of an interesting thing with Katrina because it was like it was almost like a martial law situation, and I think I'm not at all uncertain that there weren't executions that went on and some pretty stern stuff that went down, but they did. I know they did come in and, collect weapons. They went into people's homes, and that was
absolutely
a form of protection they had against looting, and the people were just stunned. They couldn't have their weapons, and they were open to people murdering them or taking whatever they wanted from them.
That's right, and I have clients even today who tell me the military is still heavily involved down there in their lives, and I'm talking about people who are actually being targeted by persons of the sort of people that I my clients, and the military is actually involved in the targeting. So there's a lot of stuff still going on down there in research. Even in the area where Hurricane Andrews was, there's still some activity. And who did they send in? They didn't send in the regular National Guard. They send in a psychological warfare unit. They didn't set up, when they asked for phones, they didn't set up phone booths. They set up the communication system that lets the military have complete access to every call.
Yeah, very interesting. We had someone here that they indicated they wanted their line unmuted, and then I don't know if it dropped out of the queue or whatnot, but I see him on here, San Mateo. I'll unmute briefly. If you do want to speak up, speak up. If not, that's fine. Are you there, guest, or did you have a question or not? It says San Mateo, California, ending in 7138. Maybe not. Maybe they hit star 2 by mistake and didn't really have a question. Okay, that's fine. If you do, just hit star 2, or anyone that does that's on the phone line, and we'll go from there. And let me just check here real quick to see if we got any more online questions at this point. We've got Jill in San Francisco. What about taking some tin foil and take it to Staples or Kinko's to get it pressed in plastic so that you would have the tin foil for use in your billfold for a long time?
Oh, so it lasts longer? Yeah, that's not a bad idea, actually. There's laminating systems that would, I'm sure would do a good job with that. If I may, let me take a moment for a plug.
Sure.
You've mentioned Pro-Paranoid Press, and I appreciate that, but I want folks to understand one thing that I've done that may revolutionize what and how they read and write, for that matter. I happen to be an inventor at heart. And in my book, In Mindless Times, which is my original intention was to write fiction when I got into writing, but that was the same moment that I got targeted, so my first 7 books just happened not to be my love. My love is fiction. So I have this science fiction book, In Mindless Times. It is the world's first ergonomic book, patent pending. And I know that sounds strange, but you do not lose your place. It's very difficult to lose your place. You do not misread words. It's very difficult. And so you read faster, and with less confusion, you have better comprehension and retention. It's easier on the eyes. You can read longer at a sitting, all kinds of good stuff. It interacts left and right brain, so just lots of good stuff. In any event, we have a writing paper also that's ergonomic. I would invite you to go to ProParanoidPress.com and look at the In Mindless Times. There's a button on the main page there that'll explain the ergonomic function, and encourage you to take a look at that. I see a day when all books and maybe magazines and newspapers will be in that format, because it has some significant benefits, not the least of which, if you're a publisher, it's 20% less expensive. Get that much more information on a page. So that's a plug for my book, and I'll shut up.
Oh, no, that's fine. That's what I was going to ask, if you would give out, your contact information. I want to be sure that people know how they can contact you. I don't know if there's any type of phone number. We may have some people that are not on the Internet, but that's okay if you don't give out phone numbers. If there is any kind of number, then...
I appreciate that. You can always reach me through the website. I have email links everywhere, but my email address for if you're a targeted person and would like my helps kit, I do also give free 30 days consultation. And I have a free sample newsletter on political control technology. If you need any of that, email me at proparanoid@comcast.net.
Okay.
Pro for professional and paranoid. If you have questions about my books, want to order books, whatever, you can go to proparanoidpress.com. My conspiracy website is proparanoid.net. And if you want to follow up on any conspiracies that I've dinked around in, you'll find that I always have information you won't find anywhere else. I do good work.
That's great.
And, you know, I'm told that, so I'm not just bragging.
You're just reporting what's reported to you.
Right. And if you need to contact me regarding books, I do also try to help other people get published. We have a whole new thing with the that we're going to try with the ergonomic books to help folks who cannot get their books into print get their books into print and do better at it in terms of financial response. Any of those kinds of questions, go ahead and email me at pppbooks@comcast.
Okay. Well, you know, I think it's pretty obvious that there are those that want to be sure that they can surveil us extensively and control us, and it's just it's the whole Orwellian scenario, and I think you've described that, the Orwellian scenario of absolute draconian rule. I think you said that somewhere.
Yeah, agreed.
And it's just, you know, it's just such an invasion of privacy. It's most who can't wrap their head around, their brain around it, or whatever, and some people, rather than accept it or look into it and say, well, you know what, let me at least do a little research and see if there's anything to this, they just want to shut it down and not go there and just be in their pretend world that everything is pretty much like you see it, maybe a little bit going on, but nothing like some of these tinfoil hat people talk about. But I think our people know better than that.
And you're absolutely right. In my talk, after I got to a particular point, before I got to the end, I was going to be switching over to get the other side's view. There's a particular technologist by the name of Stephen Burrell who talks about this stuff with very warm, glowing terms. And, of course, they have lots of ways they can sell it to us. It can create a utopian society, basically. It'd be crime-free and all those cool stuff. Of course, it means everybody has to think exactly what they're told to think. And you really have traded freedom for security, which means you have neither, really.
Exactly.
But what they do is they paint this. This guy stands up before people just like I do, and he talks about this technology and tries to get people to invest in it. And what he tells them, he gives them one particular example. He says, well, you know, for one thing, it'll, you know, the average person will live another 40 years. In fact, but we don't have to worry about that because the world population will no longer be a problem. He doesn't elucidate any further than that, but we know the Bilderbergers think there's quite a few billion too many people on the earth and they want them to go away and they have a plan. And that's scary. And that touches on my earlier dialogue. Then he tells us, but you'll be able to spit on your BlackBerry and it will tell you if you need to see a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And your body will have an implant and it will be talking to your BlackBerry and tell you if you need to go see a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And after he makes this presentation with a lot of statements like that, and he says, the only thing that's stopping us from doing this today is you.
Hmm. Thank goodness.
Well, thank goodness, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I will have to say, you're right, Mr. Burrell.
Hmm. Well, you know, I'm wondering, just basically, What do you think is really going to happen? What's kind of your take on what's going to happen in the immediate and the long range future?
Well, Fatal Rebirth did go on to make some more predictions, and as I indicated, I was actually able to stop one, possibly two terrorist events. The next big deal is going to be another terrorist event. I have some specific predictions for specific cities and specific types of terrorism in Fatal Rebirth. I don't like to just throw that out on air, so to speak, because it tends to cause a certain degree of panic that's probably not really justified, because it is hoped that by the fact of putting them in the book along with the reasons that I cite them, it will deter those events from taking place, because I've already predicted the others. I think they'd have to kind of think twice and, you know, alter their plans. So I don't want to just throw that information out, but it is in the book. But we are going to be looking for another major event of either terrorism. The other way they can do it now that they have MEFA, the law from hell, Medical Emergency Powers Act, if they declare a pandemic, whether it's real or fake, and if they tell me that there's a pandemic for swine flu or whatever, I'm going to be more afraid of the virus, the inoculation, than I am the actual virus, because I don't, number one, believe the actual virus is going to get me, and number two, I don't believe that the vaccine is going to be a true vaccine. I think that's going to be the killer, or the tracking. I mean, because they could put the tracking devices in the vaccine. So I think the people on the A list, like myself, we're the last person in the world who's going to want to take a vaccine. But the law says if you refuse to take the vaccine, the government owns everything you own, and you're in quarantine. That's so you're shipped off to the FEMA camp. So it's not a win-win scenario. It is for them. So between MEFA and the notion of a pandemic and a major terrorist event, we could very easily end up in that martial law situation where they can suspend the Constitution. At that point, it's head for the hills for people like myself.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, okay, we've got, let's see, we do have a person holding, I believe it's Ms. Anonymous again.
I just wanted to reinforce or reinstate your comment about vaccines, that, you know, we have to keep in mind when it comes to vaccines, you have to, as with the law, you have to look at the outcome rather than the intent. If you have good intentions, why don't you send me a greeting card? But, you know, vaccines are the only way to medicate somebody that doesn't need medicating. So that's what we have to keep in mind about vaccines, that it's a way of drug administration when someone's not actually sick.
Good. And
yeah.
And also it's a way of disguising. I mean, that's not the official purpose, but it is a good way of disguising anything else you want to put in their body.
Yeah, and who the heck knows, you know, how vaccine law is written, what kind of disclosures you have to give when you're when you're giving a vaccine. That's a whole other ballpark.
It is, and in fact, the Bush family has been very much in bed with not just the oil company, but the pharma industry. I mean, their first president, Bush, was actually the head of Eli Lilly at a time it was developing drugs for CIA, and of course that was right after he was director of CIA. So that's all kind of suspicious. And, you know, Eli Lilly pumped out, I think it might have the number wrong, but I believe it was 20 million doses of LSD for CIA, which immediately went through people like Timothy Leary to create the drug culture. I mean, that was no accident.
And I hear it's even ended up supposedly accidentally in baby food.
It has. There's all kinds of recent news articles. CIA injected it into bread in France. It's been actually administered in hospitals. So pharma is bad, but the second president, Bush, pretty much took away all burden. I'm probably not going to state this correctly because it's not one of my focal points so much, but pretty much took away all onus on the medical industry to make a proof or to be responsible for results in the development of vaccines. So they don't have to prove anything, and they don't even have to make any specific claims. And if something goes wrong, they're not accountable.
Is there anything else, caller?
No, not right now. And please continue to have guests such as him on the conference calls. He's been very informative. It's been well worth my while to be on.
Great, thank you for that. I feel the same way.
Yeah, thank you. Really thank do. You both.
And I know literally that we could really on a topic like this, if we just open it up and let it rip, we could go so far for so long and in so many areas. I think the main thing is to give people a really good idea of what you are very knowledgeable about, and that you can assist them to learn some pretty amazing stuff and to point them in some directions where, they can read such as your book or check out your website and get the information you're so graciously offering free to people who request it. I think maybe if you would not only give your contact information, because we're going to be closing shortly, but make that free offer you have to people and how they can take advantage of that.
Sure. If a person is... Well, let me broaden it a little bit. If you are a politically incorrect person, an activist person, and you do not think you are targeted, you might want to rethink that. And for the purpose of answering the request, consider yourself targeted. If you are a targeted person or such an activist, please contact me and ask for the free helps kit and a sample newsletter on political control technology. I would also urge you to take a look at the Professional Paranoid series, because book one tells you how to deal with traditional targeting, being followed, surveilled, etc., how to spot the clues that you're targeted. And the MC Realities book is on political control technology, same thing. These are the only two books on the market that are defensive in nature. They tell you how to. It's not just, oh, this technology exists and this technology exists. It's, hey, this is how to recognize this technology, and this is what you do about it. And likewise, if you're being targeted, how to tell if you're targeted. It is absolutely imperative that you be safe. So I will send you the helps kit. I will send you the political control technology. If you are actually targeted or think you are, send me an email that asks for more information about that. I will put you on a 30-day free consultation. For that, you would contact me at proparanoid@comcast.net. I do not have a phone contact available. You can write to me, but I don't generally write back very well. There are things that are in the way of that. I mean, I try, but it's an embarrassment for me. In any event, my mailing address is P.O. 1941. That's Clackamas, Clackamas, Oregon, 97015. That's P.O. Box 1941. And if you excuse me again. Pardon me. If you just want to talk about any of my books or topic information, that would be PPP, three P's, books at Comcast.net. Finally, the Free Will Society. We're looking for members. I'm primarily running my drive through Facebook. and under H. Michael Sweeney on Facebook. Would love you to join. We really need contributions. The money goes to help people who are targeted. As it turns out, the government only targets people with political control technology who do not have the money to defend themselves. So we need to fund equipment. We want to actually go out and capture some targeting teams. We want to get their technology. We want to get enough evidence to put some people in jail. And so we're looking for contributions for that. You can learn about that at Facebook.
Okay. Well, that is really quite good. That, I mean, you're really providing very valuable service. We do have, let's see, we have Guy in Mission Viejo. That's real near where I'm at. Mr. Sweeney, you said at that point it will be time to head for the hills for me. Are there actually places where people who prefer liberty over safety can go, where we could eke out an existence without being hunted down?
Oh, well, it's a reasonable question. First of all, if you get to that state, travel is going to be difficult if you don't have some useful identification, because there will be roadblocks. If you're kind of a survivalist kind of guy, can go out to the backwoods, that's fine and dandy, except that they'll be looking for that too. In fact, in Fatal Rebirth, such people are called runners. And in the volume 3, there's a section which shows how those folks are dealt with. It's not pretty. So I wouldn't do it unless you were pretty skilled. If you have some ID and feel like you can travel safely, that's great. The simplest thing to do is to just move left a few feet. Find a friend and live with them under your new identity. So you don't have to leave town. Just be someone else somewhere else.
Hmm. Okay. That makes sense.
Now, if you want to leave the country, yeah, there's lots of good places. New Zealand, Cuba, there's lots of places in South America. I'm not so certain I would want to go to Canada, but it's a good jump-off point, easy to get to, likewise for Mexico. Low cost of living in lots of these places. Take some cash with you, and you might do well. But you kind of have to jump the gun there. You got to be able to get out of the country. And if it's totally clamped down, that would be pretty difficult. So if you saw the major terrorism event take place tonight and you were wanting to play safe, jump across the border into Canada or Mexico so that when they declare martial law, you can go ahead and leave. If they don't declare martial law, you can come back.
Hmm. Okay. Good advice. Some things to definitely think about, that's for sure. I did want to, and in just a moment, in closing, if you would, I'm going to ask you to, if you have any final thoughts to leave us with at that time that we would do that. I just want to let people know, as I mentioned before, is the replay of this and other webinars we've had in the past, and there are quite a few of them, can be found at republicmagazine.com/webinar. You can actually download them. You can, share them with others, send them out to your email list, get the word out, and you can listen at your leisure whenever. We have the Conspiracy Con of this year that just happened a couple of weekends ago, Conspiracy Con 10, and then last year's Conspiracy Con 9, streaming by demand online, and you can find that at expostop.com/conspiracycon, and that's just like it sounds, expostop.com/conspiracycon. That last word is C-O-N. And I would also encourage you to tune in tomorrow at the same time to hear Jim Tucker. He is known as the Bilderberger Chaser, and he has done that for years, an investigative reporter. He has been hot on the trail of Bilderberg, and he has some semi-inside sources. He gets as close as he can to the action, films things, takes pictures, I think he records anything that he could possibly get a recording of. I don't know what all he does, but he comes back with information almost as if he was in the room for at least a good portion of the time, at least knowing the types of decisions that were made. He's going to share some of that with us tomorrow and tell us what is front and center on the front burner for the Bilderbergers, and usually the things he reports start playing out very quickly on the world scene. So it's a don't miss to be with Jim Tucker tomorrow. And tune in next week. As I said, our schedule is changing. We're going to Thursdays only starting next week for the time being, and it will move to a later time slot of 7 p.m. Eastern, or that would be 4 p.m. Pacific. So with that, if you would, Michael, if there's a last some final thoughts you'd like to leave us with, this would be a great time to do it.
I appreciate that. I really enjoyed your show. Your guests had very good questions. And I guess I would like to read the opening paragraph of Fatal Rebirth. It's fairly short.
Okay.
Truth cannot live on a diet of secrets, withering within a web of entangled lies. Freedom cannot live on a diet of lies, in the end, surrendering to the veil of their oppression. The human spirit cannot live on a diet of oppression, being subservient against the will to that unchecked evil. God, as truth incarnate, will not long let stand a world devoted to such evils. Therefore, let us have the truth and freedom our spirits require, or let us die seeking these things. For without them, we shall surely and justly perish in an evil world. Thank you very much.
That is very great. Thank you for that. I really appreciate you being with us today. And, you know, we may want to call on you again at some time that would be convenient for all, and have another visit, another update with the latest that's going on at that time. So,
I'd be happy to do that, and Thursdays are great for me.
Okay, and I want to thank everyone that was listening today for joining us. Join us tomorrow, and this is Earl Bell with Republic Magazine. This officially ends our webinar. Have a great afternoon and evening ahead. Thank you.
The moderator has left the